las manualidades, y es verdad, las palabras, las, si por ejemplo traía una jirafa, el cuello, la cabeza, sabía todas las partes de la, del animal o de, del cuerpo humano, de, y luego quedaban adornando en la habitación. La verdad es que muy bien.
Estás escuchando Fun Radio.
El 5 de febrero, en Valladolid, ven a la masterclass que ofrece Richard Vaughan en el Teatro Calderón. Entra ahora en tcalderon.com o infórmate en el 983 22 80 16.
English English with Richard Brown.
Welcome to the Tuesday edition of English English with me, Richard Brown. This is the show where we tear words apart. Today's word is, we're going to talk about a bird, a particularly beautiful bird. Because today, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going to talk about the word swan. Yeah, S-W-A-N. A swan. Un cisne. Claro. But be careful with the pronunciation. Okay, it's written swan, but we don't say swan. It's swan. It's an O sound, right? Swan. In other words, a swan. No, it's swan. With a really marked N at the end. A swan. Swans are beautiful birds, aren't they? It's interesting because we have a specific name for a male swan. We have a specific name for a female swan. And, of course, a specific name for a baby swan. Let's start with the male, because there's probably not much to say about the male per se. The male swan is called a cob. A cob. This comes from an old English word, cobbe, which basically meant a leader of a group, right? So hence the male, but por ese motivo, hence, H-E-N-C-E, hence, por eso, hence, the male swan is called a cob. Much more interestingly, however, is the name we give to a female swan. A female swan, una hembra, un cisne hembra, is a pen. P-E-N. Now, a pen apparently produced feathers that were much more suitable, that were much better for using as quills. Right? A quill, pues una pluma, right? To write with. And that's why we use the word pen to mean, pues ahora, hoy día, bolígrafo, right? It comes from that, a pen. Now, having said that, of course, the Latin word for a feather is sapena, with a double N. So I guess that's kind of all linked in there. But, interestingly, we have a pen, as in, pues una pluma, yeah, to write with, a quill, which is the feather from a female swan. And, of course, you had to sharpen the end of the quill. You had to sharpen the end of your pen. So what did you use? Well, people used a special little knife. And that knife, of course, is called a pen knife. And that's where we get the term pen knife from. Now, when we think of pen knives nowadays, we, of course, think of Swiss army knives. Yeah. But a pen knife, okay, you have it here in the dictionary. Navaja, it's a small pocket knife. But it also used to be known as a cortaplumas, right? And that's why it's called a pen knife. It has nothing to do with pens, but to do with feathers. The feathers of a female swan. Now, swans can live up to 20 to 30 years. Yeah? But as babies, they also have a special name. They're called cygnets. Now, there you can see the clear link with the Spanish cisne, right? Cygnets. They're also known as swanlings, but the most common name for them is cygnets, right? So they can live up to 20 to 30 years. They're well known for being monogamous. They stick with the same partner, the same life partner, for the whole duration of their lives, unless their partner, their mate, dies. And then they will mate with another bird. But normally they just stick to the same partner through thick and thin. So, of course, swans are like a symbol of fidelity. Yeah. We'll come back to some of the symbolism we associate with swans a little bit later on. Now, most swans in Europe are white. It's not so common to see black swans. In the past, like in the 17th century, at the beginning of the 17th century, and up to the beginning of the 17th century, all swans were considered to be white, because the first black swan was only discovered, was only spotted, was only seen in the year 1636. It was spotted, it was discovered by a Dutch mariner, a Dutch explorer, somewhere in Australia. So that's where black swans come from. Swans, they obviously fly in big flocks. And when they form that sort of V shape, they are known as a wedge. And they can fly pretty fast. They can fly up to about 60 mph. What's mph? Well, mph is miles per hours. Hour, sorry. Miles per hour. That equates to, that's kind of similar to, I guess about 85, 90 kph, kilometers per hour. So that's pretty fast, isn't it? They're pretty fast flyers. Swans have webbed feet, which of course enables them to use their feet to propel themselves along. And this is the beautiful thing about swans, isn't it? When you see them swim on a lake, on a river, they always appear to be incredibly graceful as they glide. They glide across the water. They glide through the water, if you like. It's a very graceful movement. But of course, underneath, below the surface, their legs are paddling. They're kicking their legs, paddling using their webbed feet. They're paddling like crazy. So although it appears to be effortless, doesn't require any work at all, below the surface, they are working their socks off. And I thought what we could do, actually, on today's show, we could maybe paint three musical pictures of three different aspects that we associate with swans. And the first one I thought we could do would be gracefulness, the gracefulness of a swan's movement as they glide across the surface of a body of water, such as a lake or a river. Now, there's a really famous piece of music that was written by a French composer. It's a beautiful piece of music, and it's called The Swan. It comes from a larger piece called The Carnival of the Animals. It's written by Saint-Saëns in the 19th century, and it kind of illustrates exactly how swans swim. Because, in fact, we can maybe break this piece down very, very briefly. Nacho, can we just have that? Can we have those first 6 seconds of the piece? You can hear here basically the swan going ticka 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 ticka, which is the swan's, was designed to represent the swan's feet. Maybe we can hear it. Oh, we've got some funny blub 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 noises. There we go. You got that? So you go dinga 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 dinga. That's the swan's feet. If we hear it again, this time maybe we can just focus on that pling. The pling that comes in is like a ripple. You know what a ripple is? You know when you drop a stone, a little stone, in on the water, and it forms concentric circles, ondas, I think you call them in Spanish. They're called ripples in English, and you can kind of hear this pring, and that is like a ripple, as there maybe the swan's webbed feet come slightly out of the water. So we've got this digga 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 digga, and then we've got the ripple. It's really nice. Bling. Can we hear it one more time? Those 6 seconds. Bring. There you go. Lovely. And then what happens? What does Saint-Saëns do? Well, he portrays the beautifully graceful movement of the swan as it glides across the water with one of the most beautiful instruments in the whole orchestra, the cello. So let's just hear about, I don't know, half a minute or a minute of this. It's absolutely gorgeous. This is The Swan by Saint-Saëns. Beautiful. Wow, I could listen to that all day. Now, swans have always been traditionally associated with royalty, certainly in England, because even now, technically, the Queen of England possesses, she owns all the mute swans to be found in the United Kingdom, technically, of course. And there was even quite a prestigious position at court known as the Keeper of the Swans. Yeah, the person responsible for looking after the Queen's swans. Nowadays, I think it's the title has changed. I think the position is now known as the Warden of the Swans. It's kind of an honorific position nowadays, although they do still count the swans swimming around and living around the River Thames. So we always associate swans with royalty. They had this nobleness about them. We associate them with purity. There's this legend, of course, of the Knight of the Swan. The Knight of the Swan appeared. He was basically the personification of purity, pureza. And he appeared into the realm of sinning, not singing, sinning, as in pecando, sinning humans on a boat that was pulled by a swan. And you see this, for example, again in music, we see this in the story of Lohengrin, who was the Knight of the Swan. And again, Wagner here composed some of the most beautifully incredible music imaginable when his character Lohengrin said farewell to the swan. The swan was going to go back to the land of the pure, leaving Lohengrin amongst humankind. And he says farewell. And I have a beautiful little recording. I want to hear this with you. This is from 1902. This was recorded. It's recorded in Italian. The original was in German. But this is just absolutely sublime. Let's have it. Completely speechless. Now, of course, you've got to kind of get used to that sound because there's a lot of interference there. The quality is dreadful. It's appalling. But that was right at the very beginnings of the record industry. This was recorded 118 years ago by a Neapolitan tenor called Fernando De Lucia, who was the biggest tenor in the world before Caruso. Absolutely gorgeous. But again, that music there conveys this purity that we always associate with swans. There are a couple of verbs as well that we use with the word swan. To swan about. If you're swanning around or around, you are kind of, you're just waltzing in and out. It's como pavonear, dar vueltas. Yeah, what do you do? Oh, we're just swanning about. But it's kind of a pleasurable thing. You feel like you look good and you're enjoying looking good as you walk about. Because, of course, swans are creatures of tremendous beauty. So when you swan about, you feel like you look good. It's not actually a very positive verb, right? As isn't. To swan off. If you just swan off, you kind of disappear, you glide off without telling people A, that you're going, and B, where you're going. Then we have to swan dive. This is an American verb, and it basically, well, has two meanings. It can mean caer en picado. So share prices can swan dive. In British English, we say to swallow dive. A swallow is una golondrina. But the idea is the same. Caer en picado, right? When sale prices plummet, they swan dive. Now, you can swan dive as well, if you want to. If you just stand by the edge of a swimming pool and dive in head first, you will be swan diving, because that's what to swan dive can also mean. But again, in the UK, we would probably say to swallow dive there. So very much an American term here, to swan dive, caer en picado. Now, another aspect that we always associate with swans is, of course, their swan song, which is the final song that they utter, that they produce just before they die. Now, this I think goes back to the fact that swans have traditionally been considered to be mute birds. In fact, there's even a species of swan called the mute swan, which is the typical white swan that the Queen owns in the UK, for example. The mute swan. They're not mute, completely mute. They make noises. They grunt. They go and they hiss. Yeah, but they don't really have a song as such. There's another type of swan which apparently does produce quite a beguiling, I don't know if I can say melody, but a beguiling song just before it dies, because of the physiognomy of its insides, of its windpipe. And as its lungs collapse, that forces sounds out of its windpipe. Your swan song. And we use this, of course, both literally and metaphorically. Someone's swan song is something remarkable that they produce either just before they die or just before they retire. Yeah? When they're no longer going to be active anymore. And again, we have a wonderful musical example of this. This is from a group of songs that the Viennese composer Schubert, Franz Schubert, wrote just before he died. They were published posthumously, and they were given the name Swan Song because it was considered to be his swan song. It was his last batch of songs just before he died. He didn't compose them thinking of that, but that's how things turned out. So maybe we could end today's show by listening to one of the songs. This is actually a transcription by the Romantic composer Liszt for piano of one of Schubert's swan songs. Thank you.
Siente la pasión que todos nuestros profesores ponen en cada clase. Vuelve a enamorarte como aquella primera vez. Siente el inglés con Bauga. Llámanos con todo corazón al 911-335833. 911-335833. O siente la emoción de entrar en grupoaugan.com.
Campamentos Vaughan son campamentos residenciales de una o dos semanas donde los niños van y se lo pasan bomba, con actividades, con juegos, con manualidades. Hablan en inglés constantemente con monitores angloparlantes y ni se dan cuenta